You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, let's get it. Locked On LSU, your team every day. I'm Matt Moscona, ESPN Radio, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Alexandria, CST, and right here for the Locked On LSU podcast, we're brought to you by Rock Auto and rockauto.com. Hope you had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Took time to celebrate those, and the reason that we pause, obviously, those brave men and women who gave their lives so we could enjoy the freedoms that we do. What a weekend it was for LSU athletics. Since last we spoke here, Paul Menary has announced his retirement. LSU is in the field. They're headed to Eugene, Oregon. We'll talk about all of that coming up here for this regional, what to look for. But I wanted to start, though, by sharing my thoughts with you on Paul Menary announcing his retirement. And these are the thoughts I shared with my radio audience on Friday, a short time after Paul Menary did announce that he was stepping away from coaching. So all season, people have asked me, hey man, is Paul Menary in trouble? Are they going to fire him? Are they going to move on? And all season, I have replied the exact same way. And I've said this so many times on so many platforms that I'm sure I could recite this in my sleep or foreign languages by this point. I have said this. Paul Menary has always wanted to coach through his current contract, which goes through 2024. However, in the last 2 years, Paul Menary has had a lot of challenges in his personal life. We know that he lost his father, to whom he was very close. Recently lost Tommy Lasorda, who was like a second father to Paul Menary. Some may not know this, but Paul Menary also has been battling a debilitating neck injury. If you see him in the dugout when the cameras catch him off, and you'll kind of see him roll his shoulder and lean his head. A lot of people have asked me, does Paul Menary have a tick? No. He's been dealing with a neck injury that has been so severe that it's actually caused him migraines. He's had trouble sleeping. It has been an ongoing physical challenge. When you see Paul Menary look pained in the dugout, it's not just because this team gave him reason to be at times, but he literally has been dealing with debilitating pain. And what I've said over and over again is, it would not surprise me if Paul Menary retires after this season. I wasn't guessing. But what I do believe is that someone who has the resume like Paul Menary has earned the right to go out how he wants, announcing it on his terms when he wants. So I and many others who have known this for a while never said anything. I will tell you today, because Paul Menary has made the announcement, that there were people who before this season encouraged Paul Menary to make the announcement before the season. Use this sort of as a victory lap, a farewell tour. Ron Polk did that. Mike Martin did that. Skip Hartman did that back in 2001. Announced his retirement before the season. It's not something Paul Menary was interested in doing. His choice, completely. And he's earned that. And some may say, well, why today? Why not wait till after the season? Well, no. I mean, I could take a guess. Maybe this is a subtle nudge, a tug on the emotional heartstrings of the selection committee. Hey, what about one more run for Paul Menary in the postseason? They are human beings making those regional pairings, by the way. And if you've actually noticed, D1 Baseball, Baseball America, a lot of those publications that put out regional projections, have you noticed where they've projected LSU to go? Many of them have projected LSU to go to South Bend, the place where Paul Menary came from whenever he arrived in Baton Rouge 15 years ago. Pretty fitting way to put a bow on his career if it plays out that way. The convo is absolutely going to be had about who is next, and it should be had about who is next, especially now that Paul Menary has made this announcement. But suffice to say that LSU has known this announcement was coming for a long time now. and they started tilling the soil for a replacement a long time ago. The old saying, loose lips sink ships. Part of the reason why, pretty good idea not to say anything, is because saying things are how deals fall apart. Jimbo Fisher, 2015. I mean, Tom Herman was going to be LSU's coach in 2016. I know there's a lot of people who think he was just using LSU to get the Texas job. One day they'll write the book and I'll read it and you'll all learn and believe what you want. But if that story wasn't on the crawl on Thanksgiving night when LSU's playing Texas A&M, Tom Herman becomes LSU's coach. Believe what you want, if it's right or good, but deals fall apart because people can't keep their mouth shut. So the question is, do you trust Scott Woodward to get across the finish line, to close like he's done so many times? I do, because he deserves the benefit of the doubt. There's going to be plenty of time to talk about who's next, and we will certainly do that. And we'll probably do part of that today as well. There's a name that everybody mentions, and with good reason. But it's never done until it's done, and we'll get there. But today really is about Paul Maneri. Man won 1,500 games, y'all. Seventh in NCAA history. He won a national title. He's got a national runner-up. Five times to the CWS during his tenure at LSU. Six consecutive years his teams were a national seed, which has only been done twice in history. Four SEC regular season titles, six SEC tournament titles. Literally anywhere else. Literally anywhere else. You are that program's Skip Bertman. But he came to the place and chose to coach in the shadow of the greatest coach the game has ever seen. And he embraced that. And I respect that tremendously, because Paul Maneri knew when he showed up here he was never going to be considered the greatest coach in LSU history, no matter what he did. And he still managed to coach and win for 15 years. He embraced that legacy. And yes, we all wanted there to be more national championships, no one more so than Paul Maneri. And you know what? But for maybe the greatest position player you've ever had in the history of your program booting a ball in Omaha, not knocking Bregman, the guy was incredible. But what you could say the what if. But for Eric Walker's injury in 2017. Maybe they have a couple more. But that's baseball. And that's where the margin for a national championship is so thin. But I'll tell you this about Paul Maneri, and having covered him for 15 years, who he is and the way he represents LSU deserves everybody's respect. I'll give you an example away from baseball. There's an organization, the Kelly Richmond Foundation. And Kelly was a friend and someone that Paul knew as well. And Kelly lost her life at a young age due to ovarian cancer. And her parents started a foundation in her name. And every year they do a gala. I have the good fortune to emcee that every year. And every year, Paul Maneri, who knew Kelly, is the honored guest. Y'all, I've been to a lot of events with coaches over my time doing this. And a lot of times, dignitaries, coaches may show up, wave, shake a few hands, and find a way to exit stage left. Every year, Paul Maneri and Karen are among the first people there and among the last to leave. They shake every hand. They listen to every story. They talk to every person because that's who they are. Genuinely good people who represented this program, this university, this city and state with class and dignity and respect, and he won. Congratulations on an amazing career, an amazing time at LSU, a time that in totality needs to be understood and respected more so than the disappointment of how this season and the recent seasons have gone. An amazing run for Paul Maneri, who steps aside after this season. And here's hoping we get good news on Monday. And we find out that Paul Maneri hasn't coached his last game for LSU just yet. And, of course, we did get good news on Monday, which is where we will pick it up next. Of course, we always love telling you about our great partners here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And we got a new one to tell you about, which is exciting. Do you ever
wonder if you love food and love to cook, how your favorite restaurant continuously and consistently makes such delicious food? Well, the short answer is they have access to the right kitchen tools. With Made In's professional quality cookware and kitchenware, anyone is capable of making restaurant quality food at home. So if you're serious about cooking, you should invest in your kitchen tools. Made In's cookware and kitchenware products are used by thousands of the world's best chefs. Made In produces professional quality cookware and knives for those who love to cook. They source the finest materials. They partner with renowned craftsmen to make premium kitchen tools available directly to you without the markup. So right now, Made In is offering our listeners 15% off your first order with the promo code Locked On. One word, Locked On. This is the best discount available anywhere online for Made In products that they've made available for our listeners. So go to madeincookware.com/lockedon and use the promo code Locked On for 15% off your first order. Again, that's madeincookware.com/lockedon. Use the promo code Locked On. Of course, I do want to delve into LSU's regional draw. Our show today is brought to you by Rock Auto and rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. By now, if you've been a regular listener of Locked On LSU, you know all about Rock Auto by now. They provide absolutely amazing service and a supply of pretty much any auto part for any make and model you could ever possibly want. Easy to use online, where they've been for 20 years, family operated, at rockauto.com, rockauto.com. When you get to checkout, remember there's a how did you hear about us box, right? Locked On, so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Bypass the big box store and shop online and have it delivered directly to your door at rockauto.com. Rockauto.com, rockauto.com.
It's amazing when we don't host, the NCAA finds a way to make it as difficult as they can for us, don't they? They send us, I feel like we're going to Siberia, you know, they're sending us to the other part of the world. It's not the other part of the world. It just feels like it, you know, the most distant site that you possibly can be. You know, I think there's three times that we've been in the tournament where we haven't hosted. We've gone to LA, we've gone to Corvallis, Oregon, and we've gone to Eugene, Oregon. But, you know, we're very grateful to be in the tournament, and I don't care where we went, really.
Pulmonary, after it was announced on Monday that LSU will head up to Eugene, Oregon for the Eugene Regional. Oregon is the host there. LSU will be the 3 seed, and in their opener, they'll take on the 2 seed, Gonzaga, and then the 4 seed is Central Connecticut. So we'll talk a little bit about the regional itself in a second. Let's talk about how ultimately it came to pass that LSU ended up in the field. So, like we talked about and have talked about for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, the metrics for LSU all lined up. Actually, the committee, when they listed their last 5 teams that got in, LSU wasn't even among them. So they were firmly in the tournament, and the reason is because of all the things we talked about. I know a lot of people were on pins and needles, but we talked about it here, that once LSU won that series against Texas A&M to get to 13-17 in SEC play, they were in. Now, ultimately, after losing the first game of the SEC tournament and having some bid stealing go on, LSU's RPI dropped from 21 to 28. So still an RPI in the 20s. They were 13-17 in conference. 9 quad 1 wins, 10 road wins, number 4 in strength of schedule. All the things that we talked about still allowed LSU's resume to stand out. As a matter of fact, we were comparing LSU to Alabama and Georgia. Those were the bubble teams from the SEC. So again, by comparison, LSU finishes with an RPI of 28, Bama 33, Georgia 41. There's a lot of people in Georgia who are not happy about Georgia being excluded from the tournament, but when we walk through this, you'll understand. So, LSU had the best RPI of the three. Strength of schedule, LSU 4, Alabama 2, Georgia 11. Georgia's strength of schedule is still very good, but LSU and Bama were both better. Let's look at road wins. LSU 10, Alabama 10, Georgia 10. So it's a push there. Let's look at quad one wins. That's RPI 1 to 50. LSU, 9 quad one wins. Alabama, 8 quad one wins. Georgia, 8 quad one wins. The bottom line is, when you look at any of the metrics, and we can also look at conference record, LSU 13-17, Alabama 12-17. Remember, they missed one game against Vanderbilt that was not made up due to rain. And then Georgia 13-17. So they all ended up with the same number of conference losses in the regular season. Bama won two games in Hoover, which got them to 14 total SEC wins. Georgia had the one win over LSU, but a head-to-head matchup in Hoover wasn't going to supersede everything else on the resume, because everything else on the resume wasn't equal. So the committee absolutely got it right. This should come as no surprise that LSU got into the field. Now, my hope was, if LSU were able to play deeper into Hoover, it might improve their seed, but that didn't happen. You know, the ideal scenario would have been to go to Ruston, but that didn't happen. Now, Ruston would have been certainly a de facto home series for LSU, because LSU fans would have flooded that regional. Instead, Alabama goes to Ruston, Georgia is out of the field, and LSU gets sent to Eugene. But I do think LSU is going to have a much better chance of advancing in the Eugene regional than they might have had in Ruston. So we will talk about that here in a second. Let me remind you about Built Bar and BuiltBar.com. The best-tasting protein bar in the world is Built Bar. Order yours at BuiltBar.com. As a matter of fact, this morning, I reordered Built Bar. That's probably the best endorsement I can give, is that I actually pay money out of my own wallet, or, you know, online, to eat Built Bar. I eat it every single day. I have a Built Bar in my desk right now. Before my show, around 2:30 or so Central Time, I'll shove a Built Bar in my face, and that'll be what keeps me going through my three-hour afternoon radio show. Find your favorite flavor at BuiltBar.com. They have got high protein, high fiber, low calorie, low sugar, gluten-free, perfect for the keto diet. It is possible to have a soft, chewy, delicious protein bar instead of something that is chalky and hard to chew. Try Built Bar today. And when you go to place your first order, use the code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15, to get 15% off your order. Again, use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
I'm ecstatic that they're going to have an opportunity to play for a national championship. We're 5 wins away from going to Omaha. That's the way I explain it to them every year. You're 5 wins away from going to Omaha. And we're not going to play any teams any tougher than we've been playing all season. With all due respect to Oregon, Central Connecticut State and Gonzaga, they're all great teams, championship caliber teams. But none of them are going to be better than Arkansas and Vanderbilt and Tennessee and Ole Miss and all the other teams that we've played this year.
Palmieri's right, but the sobering truth also is that LSU didn't have a lot of success against Vanderbilt and Arkansas and Tennessee, going just 1-8 in those three series. That's, of course, the sobering reality when you go through the SEC, but it does harden you for opportunities like this with the postseason ahead. So Oregon is the number 14 overall seed. Oregon finished the season 16th in the RPI, 20-10 in Pac-12 play, 37-14 overall. Their strength of schedule, 49. Gonzaga just a few spots ahead of LSU in the RPI at 26. Their overall record, 33-17. Their strength of schedule, 56. LSU strength of schedule, 4. So you kind of see the point of differentiation here. We'll talk a little bit about the regional as a whole as the week moves along and get you a lot of perspective from these teams. But a thumbnail view of Gonzaga, their strength of schedule is not great. Just 5 quad one wins on the season. To their credit, in the pre-conference, they tried to bolster their resume as best they could. They played 4 games at Dallas Baptist and split them. They went 2-2. They played 2 games in Lubbock against Texas Tech, lost them both. They played a 3-game series at TCU and actually won that series 2-1. After that, there's not a lot on the resume. They did play a couple of games against Oregon State. They did play a game at Oregon, a Tuesday night game where they lost 10-3. But aside from that, you just don't have a lot of meat on the bone for Gonzaga to really delve into. We'll go deep dive on the matchup as we move along through the week, but what we're expecting or what we're waiting to hear from Paul Mainieri is what his pitching plan will be. Back in 2018, when LSU went to Corvallis, they played that 2-3 matchup against San Diego State, and Paul Mainieri made the decision to start Nick Bush in that game. They went from Nick Bush to Devin Fontenot to Todd Peterson for an inning to finish it out. They won that game. And when they advanced the winner's bracket against Oregon State, they started Zach Hess, and it just didn't go well. That Oregon State team was a machine. If you remember with Adley Rutschman and Nick Madrigal and Luke Heimlich, I mean, they were just incredible. It was one of the most complete college baseball teams I've ever seen. And, of course, they ran all the way through to the national title that year. But this year, I think Paul Mainieri has to look at his opportunity to win this regional. And the only way is to go through the winner's bracket. The reality is, we can all be excited, and when postseason starts, hope springs eternal. And as Paul Mainieri said, they're 5 wins away from Omaha, and all of that is very true. But this is still a flawed LSU baseball team. And what we know is that Landon Marceau has been incredible, A.J. Labus has really struggled over the last month, and Mikhail Hilliard has come along over the past month. So, if you're Paul Mainieri, do you risk trying to pitch backwards to be able to save Landon Marceau for a potential winner's bracket game? I don't think you have that luxury. Because if you don't win game one against Gonzaga, you're finished. It's not to say you can't come back and win a loser's bracket game and maybe win another game, but if you come through the loser's bracket, you've got to win a couple of elimination games and then beat the undefeated team twice to advance. LSU can't play 5 games in this regional. They don't have the pitching to do it. So you have to be able to play from a position of strength. So LSU, in my opinion, they got to start Landon Marceau game one. You got to go beat Gonzaga game one. And then if you advance into the winner's bracket, your decision is, do you pitch A.J. Labus game two, or has Mikhail Hilliard taken that spot? In my opinion, you go Mikhail Hilliard because he has been more consistent for you here over the last month of the season. My hope for A.J. Labus is that effectively, when he threw only 20 or so pitches against Texas A&M, that means by the time he pitches, provided he does pitch in this regional, he will have gone almost a month without having an extended start. It would have been the Alabama series be the last time Labus really extended. He had the short outing against A&M. He didn't pitch in the SEC tournament. And then, obviously, he would pitch then in regional play. So maybe giving a guy like Labus that extended time off might be what he needs to get his arm back and his confidence back. Perhaps that will serve LSU well. But I think the way that Mainieri is going to have to approach this is you throw Marceau game one, you hope you win it, and you get into a winner's bracket game, and you hand the ball to Mikhail Hilliard. If you lose, you hand the ball to Hilliard in hopes of saving your season. And then if you are able to win both of those first two games, somebody's got to come back and beat you twice. And you've got Labus and then potentially your midweek lineup, whoever that may be, to set up for a potential fourth game if you need it. It's just got to be that way. The other thing that was interesting is that LSU was practicing on Monday evening after they learned that they were going to play. The field up at Oregon is all artificial turf. So LSU actually went and practiced at U High. The U High field on their campus is all turf. And Will Safford was seen playing second base. Now, Safford is a guy who played at U High, so he knows that field, he knows that turf, and this will be an interesting decision to watch throughout this week to see what Paul Mainieri elects to do. When Gio DiGiacomo went out, Mainieri elected to move Drew Bianco to center, and he put Collier Cranford in at second base. And Cranford struggled defensively and obviously is hitting somewhere just north of 100 on the season. If you're going to put a guy in for as a defensive replacement and he's struggling defensively, there's no real justification for having him in. Mainieri's going to have a couple of options. If DiGiacomo is not available and he moves Bianco to center, you could certainly put Zach Arnold at second base and DH Cade Beloso. Or maybe what he's thinking is you put Will Safford at second base and you have the option to DH Beloso or Arnold if you want a lefty or a righty in against whomever they may be throwing at that time. He could also move Dylan Cruz to center, but then you'd have to play either Mitchell Sanford or Brody Drost in right. And I don't think Palmieri wants to do that because neither guy has been super productive offensively throughout conference play. Maybe the idea is Safford could bat in the bottom third of the order. Maybe go Bianco in the 8-hole, Safford in the 9-hole, and that is effectively like having back-to-back leadoff hitters. I'll remind you, Safford was supposed to be the everyday third baseman on this team. Kind of had the yips before the season started a couple of weeks, and that's when you had that revolving door at third before the season started, and Safford never really got a spot back. It's something worth watching. I'm not saying that's what Maneri is going to do, but we've seen Palmieri do some crazy things at times, and maybe Safford's familiarity playing on turf and his ability to just get on base is something that could serve this team well in this regional. Just something worth keeping an eye on as we move throughout this week. That's going to do it for us here on the Locked On LSU podcast, brought to you by Rock Auto and rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Remember, today on the Locked On Today podcast, what is causing fans to act like idiots at sporting events, you know, aside from booze? I'll get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Be here with us tomorrow as we continue counting you down to the Eugene Regional. It is Locked On LSU, your team every day.